All right, it is Ask the Mayor. We begin a new month, October 2020, and we're with Columbus Mayor Jim Lineup. Thank you so much for starting off the month with us here on Ask the Mayor.
You're welcome. It's hard to believe it's October already.
I know.
But it's been a long 6 months, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. And we'll get into some of the coronavirus stuff here in a little bit, but I think the kind of the headliner would be early voting has started. Voters lining up. I heard they were three blocks deep in Bloomington. I know there was a line there in Columbus. Last time we talked about voting during a pandemic and officials were thinking about using Fair Oaks Mall. What's the setup like and what's the situation there?
Well, I've not been out to the mall, but I'm told that we've taken pretty much the whole Carson space. And it was the biggest store out there and used a good portion of it to provide for sufficient voting machines and for sufficient spacing, you know, so the people who do come in to vote will be able to maintain the adequate spacing that we all ask, the 6 feet that you're familiar with. Through noon today, and we're doing this, on Tuesday the 6th, we had about 250 people who had already voted, and the lines were steady. I mean, people were interested in doing this. So I'm really happy that we were able to provide that venue because, as we looked around town, there were other places where we had done early voting before, but there were none that were as centrally located or as large as Fair Oaks to provide for the distancing that we're all seeking these days.
I assume your message is vote. It's safe. Well,
yeah, absolutely. Get out and vote. I mean, when you're in the business I'm in, I mean, you get a lot of complaints. But the way you deal with that, if you're a citizen, is go vote and make your choices known. So my wife and I will get out there sometime. I don't think we'll wait to election day to vote, but we'll get out there someday and soon and register our choices. But Fair Oaks Mall is the only place in Bartholomew County to vote early. There will be several voting places on election day, but it's the place you need to go if you want to vote early, and hopefully many people will.
I talked to some election officials in Monroe County of 17 step mail-in voting process for them to get ballots out to those who need them and back safely. So in the background, you have all the mail-in voting process going on too.
Right. Yeah, we did the mail-in, Pam and I, my wife and I did the mail-in voting back at the primary. It was a little bit more cumbersome than I thought it would be or should be. But at the end of the day, I mean, that's the process we have to follow. And although there are several steps, none of them are really, technically involved. And, people can get through it. But it's just a whole lot easier to show up, walk in, register your vote, and move on.
You know, of course, election in full swing, though in some ways maybe doesn't feel like it. A lot of things don't feel the same because of the pandemic. But right. It's also been quite a news week. I just wanted to get your reaction to President Trump contracting coronavirus. Now he's back at the White House. What was your thoughts? What were your thoughts when you heard that news?
I'm just following along as best I can. But I will share with everybody that the single most effective tool we have to combat the spread of this virus is a mask. And we should wear them all the time when we are outside our houses, when we're outside our private offices, anytime when we're inclined to encounter others. We should just simply wear the mask, no questions asked. The second most important thing you can do is maintain your distance. You know, Mom always said, keep your hands to yourself. I mean, it's a little bit of an extension of that. And just be smart about crowds. If you see a bunch of people, just take your time, steer around or what have you. Because the one thing we've learned about this disease over the last 6 months is that it is an airborne pathogen. And the most effective way for us to mitigate its transmission is to wear a mask. And so I do that when I leave the house. I do that when I get to City Hall. I take it off when I'm in my office by myself because, no, I don't care to wear it. It's cumbersome. But it is, as I said, the single most effective thing we can do to control the virus. And I encourage everybody, to have one handy at all times.
Has the president and Vice President Mike Pence, do you think they've been taking this seriously enough?
Well, that's a bit of a loaded question. My sense is that you know, they have to take it seriously because they're trying to guide the country's response to it. And obviously we've had a couple hundred thousand people die as a result of this thing. But I do wish that they, you know, would perhaps exhibit the behaviors they want us to use themselves. And I suspect we'll get a little bit more adherence to that going forward.
The rolling average of Indiana cases has grown 30% since September 24th. AP report says that could take weeks, though, before the state sees any possible impact from Governor Holcomb's decision to lift most of the restrictions. That was about 10 days ago. What are your thoughts on lifting those restrictions? And is Bartholomew County and Columbus have any additional restrictions?
We have no additional restrictions. You know, we wanted to follow the governor's guidance because I think it's easier for people to understand one set of rules. And so we wanted to be able to provide those rules and as long as we think they'll work. As I said earlier, the single most effective thing to do is to wear a mask. And the governor has left that part in place. In fact, we are going to issue a letter to him today or either out today or tomorrow and ask him to continue the mask mandate beyond October 17th when it's presently scheduled to expire. But as I said, the mask is the most important part. And as long as we keep that, remind people to adequately distance and to be smart about crowds, I think we'll be most of the place, most of where we need to be with respect to trying to control the transmission of this virus. You know, there's still, I think, a 500 person rule in place. If your gathering exceeds that, you're asked to get permission from the health department. And they have a little protocol, or at least the one in Bartholomew County has a little protocol to go through to determine whether or not, you know, you'll have adequate ventilation and, you know, opportunities to distance if you want to exceed that number. But yeah, I think it's still a long way before we encourage the schools to open up, you know, seating at the football games or basketball games. I mean, we still want to keep the crowds low because we understand that it's an airborne pathogen, and the more people you get together in a closer space, the more likely the transmission will be.
Latest number I see is the state below, or 8.8% would be the state's unique positivity, 7-day positivity rate. Mm-hmm. Bartholomew County, 6.9%. But I know you also follow the hospital reports every day. Are things still pretty steady there, or is it seeing an uptick like the state?
Yeah, it's up a tad. I mean, a tad as in from 1 to 5. I mean, the number of people hospitalized at Columbus Regional is, the number of people hospitalized for COVID at Columbus Regional is a statistic that I watch most closely because, number one, I think it tells us the people who are most seriously affected by this. We want to have a handle on that. I think it gives us a good read on what kind of capacity is remaining at the hospital. And we're in pretty good shape. You know, I mean, obviously if you're one of the five, I mean, that's not a real good place to be, but from the community's perspective, for us to be able to only have five who are in need of hospitalization, that's a good number. So.
Yeah. Few projects, we kind of keep on here. One we haven't talked about lately, the Riverfront project, but I see that the city receiving a grant. Do you have any update on that project?
No, I really don't have anything new to offer. We did get a grant. It's very small. I think it was $5,000. Nonetheless, I mean, it forget the numbers for a second or the math. I mean, it's just happy to have somebody else see the value of the project and, you know, step forward to help with it. But no, we're still in negotiations with the Indiana Department of Natural Resources in terms of, you know, how the finished product will look, you know, and how we get to there from here.
Big moment last week, ribbon cutting ceremony for the new railroad overpass that we've talked a lot about. Big news for those traveling was at State Road 46 to Columbus from the Nashville area. But it eliminates a very busy railroad crossing into Columbus. And that's really the safety, and that's really the number one thing, isn't it?
Right. Ease of transportation and then safety for those who do travel. That crossing we had about 40,000 vehicles a day that crossed the railroad tracks there at State Road 46. And just keep in mind, the population of the county is 80,000. So I mean, again, that's two-way traffic, 40,000 going, you know, both ways. But it gives you the impression, or at least gives you the sense of what we've talked about in terms of there being a traffic funnel at State Road 46, there where the railroad crosses it. And so we had a ribbon cutting, and it was kind of fun. You know, we had everybody, we're outside, and we're properly distanced, and we handed out masks that were emblazoned with, Milestone's logo, the contractor, and the event and the purpose and all that. But well, the funny part was that we actually had a train, you know, that came by while we were there holding our event, and the train stopped. So, you know, it gave us a rather poignant display of why we needed to have the overpass in the first place.
You know, I think what's important to note too, I was reading a little bit about it. The work started only 11 months ago. And this is a Correct. Big project. If you look at some of the photos that I've seen online, and we typically think of road construction, maybe it's just never ending. It just keeps going on and on. How did this project get by so quickly?
Well, you know, we were able to get the governor's attention, which is always helpful in terms of, providing direction to the Indiana Department of Transportation. And they took it on. I mean, they've got a number of different projects. I mean, this is just one of. And so they wanted to get this one started and get it finished. I will tell you that, we think of professionalism oftentimes in context of professionals and the professions, attorneys or doctors or accountants, whatnot. But the guys at Milestone, I mean, they really do know how to build a bridge, how to move dirt, how to pour asphalt, and to do so efficiently and safely. And so, from design to finish was right around 3 years. And that's a process that normally takes 5 to 7. And then you're right, Milestone began to move dirt in November of 2019. So here we are in October of 2020, and we're driving on it. There's a little bit of work left to do, but it's all landscaping. And that will drag out into at least the second quarter of 2020. But it's just fun, you know, to be able to go out there. And you don't realize how flat the ground is around here. I mean, over there where you are in Bloomington or through Brown County, you know, you get lots of hills, and sometimes your sight lines are limited. But you get up on top of that thing, you get a pretty good view. If you're headed west, you get a pretty good view out towards the interstate. If you're headed east, you get a pretty good view of the city as you enter. It's kind of fun.
I did know in the Republic, notice about a utility rate increase being studied. And I know most cities have been doing this. We talk a lot in Nashville, too, about this. Bloomington talks about the aging 70, 80-year-old aging infrastructure. Growth has costs. Is that what Columbus is looking at too?
Yeah, we're looking at a combination of factors. One is some of this infrastructure we've got is 100 years old. You think back to 1920 and the materials that they used then and the construction techniques are not nearly as capable as what we have today. But yet, nonetheless, some of this stuff's lasted 100 years. We've had in one area of the city over near, 3rd and California streets, I think we've had 3 sinkholes develop over the last year and a half. And it just is an indication of the infrastructure wearing out on us. And so these are things we have to do. I mean, we really don't have much choice. Nobody wants to pay more for what they've got today. We get that. But if we don't deal with these in an ordered fashion, with ordered rates and ordered construction schedule, then we'll deal with them on an emergency basis, and that won't be fun at all. So the utilities department has come forward with a multi-year plan to phase in some rate increases and then to put that money right into the infrastructure. We've got a project coming along on 4th Street that will be funded by this. I think we've got some other projects around town. We just completed the sewer improvement project on 8th Street. And again, the numbers give you the bit of a story. I mean, when you're talking 4th Street and 8th Street, that's the old part of town. And that's the area that's most in need of work. You know, most of the expansion that we have, the increased property taxes that come from that expansion pay for the infrastructure improvements that have to go service that. So no, what we're talking about here pretty much is the old stuff. And as you can well imagine, we're going to have something turn 100 every year. So there will always be something that we need to repair or fix.
Well, and October is usually budget approval and lots going on with city budgets for next year. Can you walk us just a little bit of maybe some of the, especially with the pandemic, are there any major changes or things that you're struggling with right now?
Well, I mean, we commented earlier today that Ethnic Expo would have been this coming week. You know, that's something that we've been doing for about 30 years, and we'll miss that. But it's it's something that we had to give up for the pandemic. But yeah, the first reading of our budget is this evening, and there's really not a lot in there that that relates to COVID. And the problem or the issue we face is that in Indiana, municipal revenues run about a year behind. I mean, in terms of the manner in which they're calculated, and so our revenue for expectations for 2021 are really pretty good. I mean, compared to what we had for 2020, we anticipate though that there's going to be a real issue, a serious issue for us in 2022. So part of what we're trying to do is to get some of the capital projects in the budget this year and out of the way. We have addressed salaries or wages for our employees. You may recall we started about 3 years ago with what we called a salary study. And the whole notion was to hire a consultant who would help us take a look at what the fair market value is, so to speak, of our employees. And what we found was that wages at the city had not kept pace with other communities or with the private sector. And so, you know, we have as much of a demand for talent as anybody else does. And what we've, again, what we found was we were a little bit behind not only with respect to compensation, but a little bit with respect to benefits. And so we embarked upon a 3-year plan to try to rectify that. We brought in the first 2 years, we brought the public safety employees, the police and the fire, up to what we call the midpoint or the fair market numbers for their professions. For the rest of the city, just to find a way to make it palatable for the budget, we brought them up to the midpoint after a 3-year cycle. And well, I say after 3 years, I get turned around here on my prepositions, but the third year will be 2021. So in 2021, we anticipate implementing the last year of our salary study. And at the same time, you know, we recognize that it's been 3 years now since we had these numbers. And so we've inflated the midpoint or the fair market number by 1 percentage point. At least that's what we hope the council will approve this evening. That'll be the presentation that we make. Inflation is running a little bit above that. And we try as best we can to benchmark against, you know, the inflation that we see, consumer price index, you know, across the country. And so we feel like, you know, 1% for employees plus, as I said, the third year implementation phase for the salary study makes sense. And we'll just take care of that. And that should do us for 2021. And then, as I said, we anticipate having some reduced revenues in 2022, but we don't yet know, you know, whether we're talking a million or two or what the number is. So we'll deal with that next year. Hopefully we'll have our big capital needs out of the way and, you know, we can get through 22 without those and get back to normalcy in 2023.
Well, I know we're getting ready to wrap up here, but I did have to ask you about trick or treating. I know Halloween's coming up and it'll be something on every city's mind coming up is what to move forward on that. And if so, how to do that safely. What's Columbus coming up with right
now?
Well,
you know, obviously it's kind of funny. I mean, one of the things we get more calls about at my office than almost anything else is trick or treat. Typically we're talking about the hours, starting or stopping hours, or sometimes the weather. You know, if there's expectations of lousy weather, people get concerned about that. But the point is with respect to trick or treat, you know, we don't want to spread the coronavirus. We don't want to add anything that will, you know, increase its likelihood of transmission. That said, it's really hard to, you know, outlaw trick-or-treating, right? I mean, if an 8-year-old shows up at your front door, we're not gonna haul him off to the Who Scout. So what we believe is that if we can give some guidelines that make some sense, you know, people can use those to go ahead and engage in trick-or-treat. And those guidelines would be to mask up, as I said earlier. I think both the trick-or-treater and the homeowner need to be wearing masks. If you're a trick-or-treater, just make it part of your costume. you know, have some fun with it. Put some shark teeth on there or some blood coming out the side, you know, whatever your imagination yields. And keep in mind that the average trick or treat transaction is, you know, like 30 seconds. I mean, people knock on your door and you give them some usually pre-wrapped candy. And so it would make sense to wear gloves, just to, you know, make sure that you don't inadvertently transmit the virus through the, through what you hand off. If you don't want to open your door, but you still like to, participate, you can put a bowl out there with some treats in it, or, you know, little packages with, they're already made up, with goodies in there. And, you know, the kids can take those when they stop by. So, you know, we're thinking that we can go ahead and do the trick or treat as long as we pay attention to some simple rules. But I will tell you, I mean, one big caveat is, as I said before, we pay attention to the metrics here in Bartholomew County. And if those numbers were to take off on us, say the week before, we might come out with some different guidance. And so, you know, we will be paying attention to those, and we will make another announcement probably the Friday ending the week before trick or treat to, you know, give some final recommendations with respect to how we proceed. And it's possible, you know, that we could ask people to forego trick or treating. But right now, you know, if the numbers hang into where they are today, then we would go forward, like I said, with a little bit of guidance.
Mm-hmm. I know we're out of time, but I always like to leave you with the last minute or so. Do you have any announcements or anything you'd like to say?
No, we continue to, you know, move some of our projects forward. I mean, obviously, everything seems to be a little bit slow due to COVID, but we've had some good meetings recently with respect to our multifamily development downtown. This is ground that's south of 2nd Street and east of the jail. Be about 200 apartments, a modest-sized grocery store, and maybe some other light retail. This will be, again, built east of the jail, and I think that's going to move forward. We've got, you know, some further discussions to take with Flaherty and Collins, who are the developers that we've, whose request for proposal we selected. And hopefully we're still on track to break ground in March of next year. So I feel like we're moving forward, and that too is going to be an exciting project for our city.
Great. And I know we always get you at the beginning of the month, so we probably won't get you next month because that'll be election day. So we'll catch up with you in December, and good luck. And hopefully things have, at least on the pandemic level, have changed enough that maybe I can actually make it down there again. But
it'd be good to see you.
Yeah. We'll just have to wait and see. I can't wait to see that bypass.
Yeah, it's hard to believe I got to wish you Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.